Well, we're going to be ending up the book of Ruth tonight in chapter 4. Next Wednesday night, Mark Parshall will begin our study in Esther. Look forward to that. So you can start reading on Esther. One of the things that we have found out through Ruth, a wonderful book, just a marvelous book. And Ruth is a book about faithfulness. Sometimes we're very, very narrow-minded of what we deem as faithful. We think somebody, they attend the assemblies, you know, and they're faithful. Well, they may be faithful in their attendance, but that does not mean they're faithful to God. And sometimes we use that as the standard. Reading a book like Ruth, you and I see what faithfulness really looks like. I mean, we see it in Boaz, we see it in Ruth, and we see it in Naomi. And it's just such an encouragement to be able to see all these elements, these individual lives, how they work together, especially at a very dark age in the history of Israel. Because remember at the time the book was written, we saw at the end of Judges, every man did what was right in their own eyes. They weren't letting God lead. When you read the book of Judges, you see just out of whack how everything was. And, you know, God's trying to restore some things. And so in the middle of all of this wandering away, that's the best way I can describe it. Then you come to a Boaz and a Naomi and a Ruth. And there's this little remnant all the way through Scripture that's holding to God when others may not be. Well, I want you to come back into chapter 3, verse 11. And I want to show you some of the faithfulness of Boaz and Naomi and Ruth. Boaz is talking here in verse 11. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Boaz knows what about Ruth? Yeah, I mean, she's a woman of excellence. And we talked about that a little bit. You know, and I want to encourage us and our women, but I want to encourage the men too. We need to be excellent people. We need to be people that strive for excellence in our lives, in the things especially that pertain, that magnify, that glorify God. We need to be those kind of people. Well, after Ruth had gleaned, she goes home. Back to Naomi, to their home. I want you to look at verse 16 and 17. When she, we're speaking of Ruth, when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. That's Boaz. She said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me. For he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" What about the faithfulness of Boaz here? Yeah, he definitely. Is he a giver? Is he thoughtful for the needs of others? Always in everything. This isn't the same kind of an illustration, but it's a good illustration to show sometimes that not being a people of excellence, we don't think in these terms. I was at a meeting, holding a meeting in a place, and they had already laid some things out to me, and we got your meals set up, and where you're going to be each evening, and that. Okay. So we got ready Sunday morning, and I taught the class, and we started the lessons. Right after services, I'm in there talking to a couple of people, and I look around, and everybody's gone except the 2 people I was talking to. So I thought, okay, well, they're out in the parking lot. Maybe some their way. I know who I thought I was supposed to go with. Got out there. Everybody's gone. I thought, wow. Well, I guess I get to eat by myself today. And, you know, but it struck me just a little bit that do we not even consider visitors? Do we not consider other people what they need? And you know what? That didn't happen just Sunday. That happened Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday when I was there. And I thought of that. Boaz wanted to make sure that Ruth went back home to Naomi with food. Take care of her needs. Look at verse 18. Then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it or has settled it today." You see, he told her what? Remember what Boaz had told Ruth? Yeah, I'm going to redeem you. But I'm not the closest relative. So, what does Naomi know about Boaz? He's true to his word. And she knows he's reliable. This day will not end until he gets this matter taken care of. You just watch and see what he does. Well, what we're going to see here in chapter 4, what we're going to see is why Ruth or why Naomi was so concerned for Ruth and her security. There's a reason for that. Look back at verse 12 while we're here in chapter 3. I'm just kind of moving around in it. Now it is true I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Boaz would redeem her. But what was the case? Yeah, last week we looked at Leviticus 25, and you can mark it and go back and read it again. But the closest of relatives were the ones that redeemed out of the family. Boaz was a close relative, but he wasn't the closest. And so when you start looking about this, he has to go to the closest of kin. So let's see how this works out. Chapter 4, verse 1. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. A lot of times the gate of the city, that's where they all, a lot of times the men would gather and they would discuss situations. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the closest relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, "Turn aside, friend. Sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. Verse 2. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Verse 3. Then he said to the closest relative, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So what's Naomi about to do? And she has to. Probably for the sake of she's poor. She doesn't have anything. Beg pardon? I'm just trying to think. She's got to sell. She knows she has to sell. That's why back earlier, I need you to have some security. And we talked about that in one of the lessons. So he's concerned about her. And now the land that her husband Elimelech owned, you know, meant, that if she sells it, where would this put Ruth? Threw the inheritance away? What was unique about that, though? Ruth's a Moabitess, living among the Jews. She's converted, she's proselyted to a Jew, but she's a Moabite. And you remember all the time when she was gleaning in the field? You remember how what Boaz would say to his workers? Don't you harm her. Don't you talk against her. You let her be. So there was a tendency among the Jews to look down on people like that. And it's really interesting here. Do you not realize that not one time does he tell us who the closest relative is? Not one time does he talk about his name. And how close is close? See, we don't know that because that's not the point. That's not the point. You know, one of the things we saw in Leviticus 25 was that when you had to sell your land, there was a year called Jubilee, 50 years span. What happened on the year of Jubilee? Everything that the previous owners owned reverted back to them. Because God was wanting to take care of the people in the land. Sometimes things got so difficult you'd have to sell your things. God's a gracious God. And so, here we are. Ruth, the closest relative, Boaz, they're about to embark on something that's very, to me, I thought was very tremendous. Look at verse 4. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will not redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you. And he said, I will redeem it. Well, what does that do to the plan? It really didn't mess it up, because you remember what Boaz said to Ruth? I've got a closer relative than me, and if he will redeem, let him redeem it. But then if he chooses not to redeem it, I will redeem it. So he was giving her comfort and strength. And so now the whole scenario has been set up. And again, you want to know what faithfulness is? Boaz, and we need to listen carefully to this. Boaz did not work this out. Sometimes when we want something badly or you know, for ourselves or a situation, we try to work the angles. And let it off. Boaz trusted in the Lord. And he goes back and he does exactly what the law of God says. He's going to let him have the say-so. And how did the closest relative respond? I'll redeem it. We're talking about the land. I'll redeem it. Because it's going to be security for Naomi and for Ruth. Well, let's keep going. Verse 5. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance. Now, you know what the law of Moses required in families? If you had a family member die, and you're especially a male, you have to uphold their name. You have to. Well, one of Naomi's sons, Mahlon, He is the one that was married to Ruth. So according to the law of Moses, and Ruth now has been converted, so according to the law of Moses, what else comes with this redeeming? Yep, the widow. And he makes absolutely sure he knows Ruth the Moabitess. Well, that, you know, would create a little bit of problem, and it does, apparently. Look at verse 6. The closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself, because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. What changed the redeeming process in the eyes of the closest relative? Ruth. He was going to do it up until he was told, you've got to redeem. You got Ruth too in this deal. Yes, sir, Ken. Well, we'll see that, but Boaz is fulfilling the law of God. Because, yes, Ruth is part of Naomi. Ruth married Naomi's son. And so with the result of all of that, Boaz understands what goes with the purchase of this land. Well, he didn't have to. He didn't have to. He told her he would. Okay, I will redeem you. He told her from back there in chapter 3. Okay. Does that help? Good.
I just thought though that, I didn't know whether he truly, if you love somebody, you hope you're going to marry her because you love somebody, not because they have a big inheritance or they have a big house or whatever like that. So I was thinking that maybe I didn't know whether Boaz married her because
Right. Well, you know what's really interesting when you read back here in these Old Testament books? There's a lot of people married not for love. They didn't. You know, there was a lot that did. But, yes, sir, go ahead. Right.
That's an indicator of love for the good of Ruth.
Right.
For the good of
Naomi. Yes.
The marriage was a benefit to him when it became his right to marry.
Right.
And he was not going to make it his right to marry by doing anything outside of what the law says.
Yes, that's a good point. That's a good point, Richard. And Richard's exactly right. Marriage here is all about fulfilling the law of God and taking care of the family that had lost one of the members. And you got to uphold that, that part of it. Let's keep going. Here's the process. You know, I was just thinking, I don't know if y'all realize that I'm reading out of my Bible. That's why I struggle a little bit, but I'm getting there. I think it's Deuteronomy 25. It's where I want. Yes, come to Deuteronomy 25, if you would, please. Here's the law that we're looking at in all this. Deuteronomy chapter 25. Look at verse 5. When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not marry outside the family. to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her, take her to himself as a wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. It shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. But if a man does not desire to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate of the elders and say, "My husband's brother refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel. He is not willing to perform the duty of a husband's brother to me." Then the elders of the city shall summon him and speak to him. And if he persists and says, "I do not desire to take her," then his brother's wife shall come to him in the sight of the elders and pull his sandal off his foot and spit in his face. I find it amusing. And she shall declare, "Thus it shall be done to the man who does not build up his brother's house. In Israel, his name shall be called the house of him whose sandal was removed." That's law. Can you imagine that? Smack him with a shoe and, you know, and spit in his face. But what do you learn from that, from just that reading? What does it tell you about God's looking at situation? Right. Right. And what you're seeing here, you don't want your name or your family blotted out of the history of Israel. That's the purpose. We got to keep the lineage, the name going. That was the purpose of all of that. And so the closest relative ends up saying what? Nope. I'm not redeeming. Yep. He gave the right. Now, you know why he has the elders and sitting there, the other people? They're witnesses to what's being said. Come back to Ruth. Look at verse 7. Now this was the custom in the former times in Israel concerning the redemption and the exchange of land to confirm a matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another. And this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself." And he removed his sandal. He's not going to hit him with it, okay? Verse 9. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You're witnesses today, and I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from among his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today." There's the process of what went on. And it gets explained. Now think about the situation of redeeming. Not only did he redeem the land, he redeemed everything that went with the mother, of Elimelech, the sons. He took everything with it. And now where do they belong? Who's our Redeemer? Now you're going to see, you see a tie. This is how they redeemed back there to uphold the name. Jesus redeemed us. And now who are we in relationship? We're children of God. Now you own. He now owns everything to raise you up to something. Go ahead. Absolutely.
And Jesus loved us. And I don't, I mean, maybe I'm missing the point now. I should have had a headache all day ago, but maybe I'm missing the point, but you know, maybe eventually in these Old Testament marriages, maybe the husband always does love the wife, but I see a big difference in the redemption of Jesus doing that for us because he loved us and he gave himself up for us by dying on the cross.
Okay.
And, but I don't see the real, I mean, maybe he eventually loves you.
Why did Boaz redeem? No, it was that. That's true. That's the result. He did it because who was his love for? He loved God. He was doing everything that there was a love relationship between God and Boaz. And just like you and I were redeemed, we went for years and we didn't have any aspect of who Jesus was. Didn't care. And then one day till his love came to us. And he redeemed it. Well, I'll just show you. Come to Galatians chapter 4. We'll come back over here. Galatians chapter 4. I'll just read it to you. Look at verse 4, and I'll get to you, Chris.
What chapter?
Chapter 4, Galatians 4. Look at verse 4. But when the fullness of time came, God sent forth His Son, born of woman, born under the law, so that He might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. Now think about this. Was Ruth one of the children of God? She became that. Not initially, she wasn't. Just like initially we weren't any part of God, any part of Christ. And so guess what? He sends Jesus, born a woman, and being born a woman, and to redeem those who are under the law. He's buying them back to himself out of the law. And that when he did that, he adopted. Has Ruth been adopted? There's your similarity, Ken. The same thing that Jesus did to us is the same thing Boaz was doing to Ruth because of God. Same deal. Chris, you had a comment there a while ago. I didn't want to...
I want to get to all the points. I've always been troubled. He raised up Mary's name, but in the Gospel of Boaz.
Yes. And we're going to see that in just a moment. Yeah, I appreciate you saying it. Yeah, because, yeah, Malon's never mentioned again after this. You know, so... Did you have a hand up, Rob? Okay, I thought maybe you did. Go ahead, Roger. Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah, the inheritance is what now? Right. Well, you know, I don't want to sound crass about this. Heaven's not our inheritance. Heaven's our gift. It's a gift that's given to us. And so, as Jesus redeemed us, it comes off the same redemption. And I hope you see the tie back there. Because we have to be redeemed. Because we didn't belong. And now we belong. Go ahead, Lynn. Yes, something. Well, the word jeopardize in the Hebrew, that word jeopardize comes from the idea that you may put your inheritance, it'll put an inheritance in danger because it's not going to work out. He's got his own land. He's got his own inheritance. And now buying this, and you tie Ruth into that, I can't. This may jeopardize my inheritance. Does that make sense? Well, because she's a Moabitess. That changed everything for him. So you have to take on Ruth, the Moabitess, to raise her up her husband's name. No, I don't want to redeem her then, because that's going to jeopardize my inheritance. Because I'm going to have a Moabitess in my lineage. I'm not about to do that. So whatever avenues that went down, that's kind of what that is. All right? So, oh, go ahead, Ron. Yes. Right. Right. Yeah. Because of God. Because of God. We'll come back to Ruth. Let's continue on here. Look at verse 11, chapter 4. All the people who were in the court and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve the wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem." Ephrathah, that's another name for Bethlehem. Actually, Bethlehem many times was called Bethlehem Ephrathah. That's how they did. So it's just another name for Bethlehem. But I want you to know how they saw this situation. How did the people see it that were in the court? They were glad. Yeah. And how did they compare Ruth in this whole situation? Yeah, Rachel and Leah. They bring them up in this thing. May your home be like Rachel and Leah. Why is Rachel and Leah important? Do what? Yes. Well, Rachel and Leah came, the tribes of Israel. You go back and read Genesis 29. And you go in there and you'll see, you know, Jacob, he worked 14 years to marry Rachel. And he thought he was working 7 years. When he got through 7 years, Laban came to him and said, "Uh-uh, you can't marry Rachel after seven. No, our custom is you marry the oldest first." So he gets stuck with her. Ah! You know, there became a little bit of a little bit of air between Rachel and Leah because they worked another 7 years. And he says that he was so in love with Rachel that it just seemed like it didn't last any time. Any of y'all like to work 14 years for your wife? Yeah, he won. Oh, what a deal. So, you know, out of Leah and Rachel, and also at the time too, they had maids. And the maids ended up, Rachel's maid, Leah's maid, they ended up and they married Jacob. And so out of all of this marriage things, that's where we got Israel. That's where we got all the tribes of Reuben and Simeon and Gad, and they all came from these two. This is the lineage of Israel. Well, let's keep going. Look at verse 12. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman. Now who do we bring up? Perez. Who is this guy? Beg your pardon?
Tamar's boy.
Yes. Tamar was Perez's mother. And so, go to Genesis 38, and you can read about Perez. And this is important. You'd say, well, why are we talking about that? May your house be like that of Perez and Tamar. Because you know what we're about to find out? Perez is an ancestor of Boaz. That's what we're just about to find out here. He's going to tell us that. Look at verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went in to her. And the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today. And may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer in your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him. What was the attitude? How did Naomi come back from Moab? Bitter. Bitter, depressed. What's happened to Naomi now? She has made, I lost my husband and I lost both of my boys and call me Mara, bitter. I'm not blessed of the Lord. And all of a sudden Ruth is in this deal and she begins to thank God for Ruth and what Ruth is doing. And now we get here and Ruth bears a son. And guess what, Naomi? The name of Elimelech, the name of your family is being upheld. Isn't that great, Naomi? You're no longer cursed of God. You know, as Naomi thought. God's turned this whole thing around on her benefit. Well, look at verse 16. Now, I hadn't finished giving you all about Perez yet. Verse 16. Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse. The neighbor women gave him a name saying, a son has been born to Naomi. So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. We got Perez in here. Now we got Obed. And now after Obed comes who? Jesse, and after Jesse comes David. The lineage is now flowing down. How the Lord worked all this out is just absolutely incredible to you and me. Let's keep going. Verse 18. Now these are the generations of Perez. To Perez was born Hezron, and to Hezron was born Ram, and to Ram, Amminadab, whatever. I can't hardly see the letters. There are too many humpbacks. Yeah, Amminadab, thank you. And to Amminadab was born Nashon, and to Nashon, Solomon. And to Solomon was born Boaz, and Boaz to Boaz, Obed. And to Obed was born Jesse. And to Jesse, David. David was promised that a king would rise from his throne, which was Jesus. And the whole lineage of everything, guess who's there? Ruth the Moabitess. Israel detested outsiders. And yet they fought with the apostles at the teaching of Jesus. They fought with against the Gentile being a part of all of this. And yet in their own lineage, guess who was there? Yeah. A Gentile. Go ahead, Eric. Right. Yeah, they were looking, when they were trying to find a king, they thought it was going to be the most handsome and strong, and David was a little ruddy when he came in. We're not done right quick. We got one more thing. I want you to come over to Matthew chapter 1. And this is why Matthew put this in here. Matthew chapter 1. Look at verse 5. Solomon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. And Obed the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David the king. And you know what? This is incredible. Why this is so incredible? Matthew's writing this down. That was written back in the book of Ruth. Matthew didn't know Ruth, but now he's writing down the lineage, calling them by name. Look down at verse 16. Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, by whom Jesus was born, who is called the Messiah. Ruth the outsider. Ruth the widow. Ruth from widow but being converted. Ruth was living in a strange land with a God of heaven and earth that was so foreign to her, but she accepted that. Ruth was redeemed. Ruth is a direct tie to Jesus Christ, the Messiah. And it's pretty neat, isn't it? Last thing. Why we need to be concerned? God rewards faithfulness. That's why we need to be concerned. And he worked everything out in this whole book. Thank you. Appreciate you. Esther next week.